Welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Nova Reed. I am slightly excited today, not just because I get to be in community with you again for the next hour, but because I have the most incredible guest who I can't wait to introduce you to. But first, checking in, how are you doing? Huge shout out as ever to my wonderful patrons for your support in helping keeping season two of this podcast afloat. And I'm glad that you are gaining such knowledge. I received the most, every now and then I received, I call them love notes. So, and they're not the formal traditional love note, but I receive a lot of hate for doing the work that I do. So I really love receiving letters of gratitude or these love notes that turn up in my inbox every now and then. And I received one recently about how this podcast has really changed someone's life. And that was never my intention to, that was never the goal when I started this podcast. It was always just providing a platform to share stories and be in conversation with people who deeply inspire me and to share their work and their voices with the world and to get to provoke thought and, you know, even better action. But to receive feedback like that just from listening to my podcast and my guest was really, really quite humbling. So I do appreciate that random emails and messages on social media that share how much this work and this podcast is helping or changing you. It's a nice break from the racist trolling. So I do love love notes from you. Thank you so much. It's they're deeply received. Thank you also to those of you who've been feeding back about enjoying my new course. So if this is new news to you, well, it's not a new course. I've been running an online anti-racism course since 2019, and it's recently had a gloss and an upgrade. It's on a shiny new platform. Content has been upgraded. Accessibility has been improved, so it better supports different learning styles and differing needs. And you lot are loving it. There's always a risk to investing in something and you know, not knowing if people are going to engage with it in the way that you hope, but they are. So the course is called Becoming Anti-Racist with Nova Reed, and it takes people on a journey, unsurprisingly, to become anti-racist. And it's honest. It's focuses on interrogation, learning to look at the parts of ourselves that we find challenging, and learning to be with shame and move through it so that we can transform. And it's giving people tools, knowledge, language, understanding history, case studies, film, books, videos from me, the lot, the shebang. And for those who really do engage with the work in a meaningful way, it's been reported over and over again that it's changing people's lives. So for those of you who are showing up and doing the work fully and completely, thank you so much for being committed and sharing your feedback with me. So this episode today, I'm so humbled to be able to be in conversation with this incredible human being, formerly known as Philopoku Jima, informally, or more fondly, shall we say, known as Lady Phil. Now, I have been trying to think about how I introduce Phil, and I'm going to woefully underrepresent all that she does and the incredible things that this human being is doing in the world. So I'm going to divert script, which I don't normally like doing, but I just want to make sure that I encompass all that she is doing and all that she is holding right now. So Phil is founder of UK Black Pride, and that's where I first came to discover her and her work. And I think we met online. Oh my goodness. I want to say 2016. I'm not entirely sure. I'm going to need to fact check that. But we haven't actually met each other in person yet. I feel so connected to her. She is somebody who deeply cares about people. And it is so evident in our interview and our conversation, but also in how I have experienced her. She's so generous. She's holding so much, and she's also just so generous with her time, who she brings along on that journey. The support, every now and then there'll be a DM saying, "I'm proud of you," or there'll be a comment that says, "I see you," or when I've hosted events, I've got a bunch of flowers, and those things, that the small things that make such a difference when you're in the belly of dealing with white supremacy, because it acknowledges and it shows that she recognizes all that you are, and also what you've had to go through and what you're enduring to be in this belly of white supremacy, as a somebody who's doing similar work. So I'm very humbled to be able to be in community with Phil today, and I've diverted. I said I was going to stick to script and I diverted. So not only is she founder of UK Black Pride, and a community builder and organizer, she is an Albert Kennedy Trust patron, and she's executive director of Kaleidoscope Trust, which is an organization that is working towards the liberation of LGBTQ people around the world. So her work is far-reaching and international. And one of the reasons that she's fondly called Lady Phil is because I describe her, and I know she won't like this, but I'm doing it anyway. I describe her as a bit of a legend. She turned down an MBE in the new honours list in direct protest to the British Empire's role in colonisation, and more specifically, Britain's firm role in embedding anti-LGBTQ laws across the entire British Empire. So, that's just some of the glorious things Phil is renowned for, and why she has the title Lady Phil. And she's mostly known for the incredible work that she does to bring inclusion and celebration and joy for people whose identities are black and brown, and also intersect with being queer. And we talk about everything. I found it so nourishing. I really hope you do too. We talk about, obviously, racism and how it intersects with other communities. We talk about managing expectations when you are doing social justice work and you are creating great impact within your communities, and some of the expectations that come with that, and managing the overwhelm. And we also talk about reimagining what spaces intentionally curated for people who are often underrepresented and unseen, reimagining worlds for us, and it is glorious. As ever, I would love to know what you think. You can connect with me on Instagram over at Nova Reed Official, or if you're in my Patreon community, you can message me directly there. I'm not going to leave you hanging anymore. Let's go direct to the episode. Welcome to another episode of Conversations with Nova Reed. I am joined by incredible human being Phil Opoku-Jimma, also known as Lady Phil, founder of UK Black Pride. Phil, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, Nova, it is a pleasure. And, you know, we've been meaning to have this conversation for so long, and we've been wanting to connect, but obviously COVID and everything else. But it's wonderful to be here with you.
Oh, I feel very honoured. I feel very honoured. I love to start by just easing in and seeing how you're feeling, if you're happy to share. How are you feeling?
Yeah, sure. You know, this is a question that when people ask you, you're like, yeah, do they want the quick answer or the long answer? And the long answer may take me through so many different emotions. So I have a friend that every morning we ask each other, how is your heart feeling? Because your heart feels different ways at different times. So right now my heart's feeling full because we're having this conversation and it's wonderful to connect. I'd say at the same time, feeling a bit overwhelmed with the amount of work that has to be done. and the fact that it is Saturday and you want to stop, but you know that people are depending on you to respond, to get things done. So, yeah, I'm flitting between a bit overwhelmed and under pressure, but full because I'm carving out this space to speak with you.
Yeah. So
this is not just about me. How is your heart feeling?
Thank you. Thank you, Phil. Expansive. Mm. And there's a little bit of dis-ease.
Mm.
There's a little bit of dis-ease. And there are many things that you say that resonate. And I think it might be a nice topic for us to explore a little bit as well when we're, you know, heads or faces of big movements that are linked to social justice and you know, the complexities of bearing the weight of that and also the privilege of that. So I hear you and I appreciate your human response.
Yeah.
So who is Phil beyond her roles?
Oh, wow. Okay, talk about going hard or go home. Who is Phil? Phil is somebody who's always evolving and learning and unlearning and getting to know herself on a daily basis. I think you spoke about movements. Whilst there's Kaleidoscope Trust and UK Black Pride and Albert Kennedy Trust and Diva Magazine and everything else, I would say my first and most important job is that of being a mother.
Mm.
And I'm mother to an amazing 26-year-old, although I still like to pretend I'm 21. she is the person that I would say makes me feel, you know, a sense of completeness.
Mm.
That's a word that I can use. You know, we've grown together. I had her young and she's just so real. She's so raw. She's so unapologetic. She's so direct. She's tasty as well. But that's what makes me feel, I guess, feel as a mother. And people don't often ask me, who is Phil? I'm always only Lady Phil, or I'm Philip Okujima for work, or I'm Miss something, you know, in a meeting. So, Phil's a mother. She's a sister. She's a lover. She's a, you know, an OCD person when it comes to cleaning the house. She's a, she's an intriguing person who loves people,
and
loves really unpacking what makes one's mind operate the way it does.
Mm.
I'm inquisitive, and I'm setting my ways a little. Not that I should be admitting that, but I am. I'm setting my ways. There's a slight scorpion element of being stubborn, but that said, Who is Phil? See, as I evolve and grow, you know, tomorrow I'll find out something new and different about myself that I'm like, oh, I didn't know that existed within me.
Yeah. And isn't the wonder of discovering who you are really exciting?
It is. It's also scary, though.
Yeah.
Also scary because when you're working in so many different spheres and connecting with so many different people, you try to provide a form of consistency. But then when your vision or even your values start to change because of who you've engaged with, to some people that you met last year, they'll say, oh, not really fond of her because she's just changed so much.
Yeah.
I've changed for the better as I see it. And it may mean that my values don't align with how I was a year ago.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the scary part, because you know that you're going to end up losing people.
Yeah. And that's
We get used to things that make us feel comfortable as well. And also, I don't know about you, but I'm very loyal by default. So the losing people, even if it's relationships that are no longer aligned or there's a mismatch in values and there isn't a road or path forward, I struggle with that. I struggle with loss. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I can relate. And loyalty is so important that I think, in the past, I've tried to be such a pleaser,
yeah,
in order to not upset or rock the apple cart. Whereas now I'm like, actually, you know what? The loss may be making room for doors opening in other places and spaces.
Mm. Yeah, I'm going to let that land. Thank you. So if you don't mind sharing, where did you grow up and when did you discover you were Black?
Oh, Nova. I had been waiting for this conversation. So I grew up in a number of different places. I was born in Islington, moved to Edmonton, went to school for the first year in secondary school there, and we were then around Winchmore Hill, Edmonton, to Enfield, and then got shipped out to Waltham Cross and Cheshunt. So I went to school in Hertfordshire for my main years. I was the only Black child in that school for, until the fourth year.
Wow.
Yeah. And when did I realise I was Black? I think it was when I went to Hertfordshire School, because my parents, we never really spoke about being Black, but we spoke about being African.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, so, being Black in a Hertfordshire school where you were constantly picked on and bullied and told that your Black is ugly and you live in a mud hut and you look like a monkey and everything else was not necessarily the best times of my life, but have shaped why I do what I do now.
Mm. And what impact did that have on you of being othered?
When you're young, I mean, everyone wants a place to belong. Everyone wants a place of safety, whether you're in like this little girl gang or whether you are, you know, around like-minded people. So when you don't have that, you definitely feel marginalized and know that you're different. You know that you don't fit in with the blonde hair and blue-eyed crew who have their socks rolled down and their shorts rolled up slightly. And you try to fit in, but it doesn't happen. So the others, I don't think I really would have understood that at the time I was going to school. I just knew that I was different.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know the answer to this, but I would love it if you would share with my listeners, what led you to finding UK Black Pride in 2005?
I think part of what you even just said about the othered and that sense of not seeing yourself in spaces, but more importantly, in 2004, I was running what was called BLUK, BLUK, Black Lesbians in the UK. And it was much more of an online sort of activity, connecting people. And I wanted to take it offline. So when we took it offline, we went to Southend in 2004 to celebrate ourselves as Black, lesbian, and bi and trans women. And that feeling absolutely was was great. And at the time, there was also a real sort of the awful propaganda of, you know, the BNP, the far right.
Yes.
You know, the hate that was out there, the vilification of women, the sexism, misogyny, but also we weren't seeing ourselves in mainstream prides.
Yes. So
2005, I went to what was a group of leaders in our communities who were supposed to be at the forefront of really challenging all forms of inequalities. And I asked them, you know, we need support, we need some guidance, we need some help, because we want to have a UK Black Pride in this country.
Mm.
Nova, I kid you not, and I tell this story every time I do, it still hurts me to my core that I was laughed at, I was jeered at, and I was told to, excuse my language, F off and go back to where I came from.
Wow.
Which was Islington that I was born in. So you can top up my oyster and maybe I can go back there.
Wow.
So it showed me that there was a need for Black and POC queer people to have a space, because our white comrades didn't understand the need for us to look at things through an intersectional lens.
Yes.
That we couldn't just fight homophobia without actually looking at how racism is so rampant in society and also within the LGBT plus community.
Yes.
So when they said no, that's it. You know, what was that saying? You know, you take your hand and make fashion, right?
Mm.
We decided that we're resilient people. We can
go
through so much that we made sure UK Black Pride happened. £477, 22 pence is what it cost us. And we had 200 people there, and it didn't come without its struggles. So UK Black Pride was created for a necessity, because of a necessity. It was created out of frustration. It was created to respond to discrimination that we feel.
Mm.
And it was created to also celebrate ourselves where we don't see ourselves in the wider and the bigger picture.
Yeah. There's so much I have to say. There's something, and it comes up a lot, where there is this automatic assumption and racial bias and what other isms are underneath it, that when you're advocating for LGBTQ rights, the image that you see is somebody in a white body. What you're assuming and forgetting about is the people who are Black and also intersect in that community. Yeah. And I find that's a common theme. There's an automatic assumption that they're, you know, that we're not in those communities either.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a common thread and theme that we see all the time. And I think what we have tried to do as Black and POC, which is people of colour, is try to fit ourselves into the templates that have already been created.
Yeah.
And what UK Black Pride sets out to do is imagine and reimagine difference.
Mm.
Because we cannot keep on fitting ourselves into a template which was not necessarily built and made for us to support us.
Yes.
So whilst we try to fit into that mould, it feels tight.
Yeah.
It feels like it's squeezing on your neck. It feels like, you know what, this outfit is just not right for me.
Yeah.
And that's when people then start to feel a sense of, do I really look like this? Or does it feel right for me? Or actually, you know, it becomes poor and ill mental health because we're trying to grab at something that actually is not for us.
Yeah. And contorting ourselves in the process and losing who we are as we go.
Exactly. You know, and I can't contort. I'm a big boxing woman that's not trying to put my leg behind my neck and know, do the splits. That's not happening. So we have to want to reimagine, what does that space look like for us? How do we make sure it's safe and it's and it's beautiful, and it allows us to stretch and grow? It allows us to cry and be happy at the same time. It allows us to apologize to ourselves and then also be unapologetic.
Mm.
Because we don't apologize to ourselves, and we don't also tell ourselves, you know what, it's okay. It's okay today. Yeah. If you're having one of those days, it's okay. But if you're molded into this niche template, which is not for us, you can't even have the headroom and the space to unpack things which may be triggering, which may be generational trauma, maybe, you know, things about how you love or receive love.
Yeah.
Because you're confined.
Yeah. 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 And all of those things stop us from living in our full humanity.
Absolutely. Oh, I love you, Nova. I'm literally living for, I'm eating this conversation. Wow. Because we don't often get to have these conversations one-on-one or collectively as a group.
Yeah, the love is mutual, but there are so many conversations. Because of the work that I do, I am often in spaces that are majority white.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, this is so nourishing, because there's so many layers to all of this. There's so many layers about what we've swallowed, what we've absorbed, what's learned and what's not ours, the impact generationally in behavior, where homophobic laws came from that are in Caribbean and African countries. Like, most people don't have any cognition that these mm-hmm. laws came from as a direct result of the white English elite in colonialism. So everything has a knock-on effect, even in Christianity. I don't have time to go into Christianity today. I don't know why I'm bringing that up.
I hear you. You know, when you're feeling something, sometimes you have to let that out, because it's there and it's not to be stifled. You know, my day job is exactly that. So, you know, I always say UK Black Pride is my gay job. It's the volunteers that make this happen. But my day job, I run and lead LGBT Human Rights International charity, which is about looking at legal reform. Mm. It is about those colonial era laws that exist that have made things so problematic and challenging for the ways in which Black and brown, or people in the South, navigate their lives.
Yeah, yeah. And are still impacted by those laws. I mean, the laws still exist in many of the countries, but, you know, the ripple effects are far and reaching, and people never look at the whole picture to understand why we are at where we're at, and what we need to, like you say, create spaces that are intentionally built for us so that we can navigate the complexities of all of that.
I think if we were to really look at the interconnectedness of the colonial era laws and how our families may or may not react to us coming out, and what the role Britain plays in those colonial era laws, it will be far too uncomfortable for so many.
I know.
The conversation even around race, you know, you can't make it up. Whether it's the government or whether it's high-level officials, nobody ever really wants to tackle race and racism, because this country has been built on the backs of those who have invested time and energy through forced labor to make sure we're at a place that we've got a booming economy, whilst the countries in Africa and the Caribbean and Asia and the Pacific have been decimated, have had resources taken away from them, which leaves them in very precarious situations, that leaves them facing criminalization because of who they are, which leaves them, you know, not being able to be the woman or the girl that they are because of those laws. They're owned, they are, or they're cast aside, or they're disrespected, or they're discriminated.
Mm.
So unpicking and unpacking the history and that trajectory of where we're at, even in the Commonwealth, is going to be very, very difficult. But we, I guess that's what we do in our day job, to make sure we can address some of these things, but it won't change overnight.
No. And I I learned that the hard way. You have a thirst for change. You know, those who are most impacted by injustice have a, rightly so, a thirst for change now. And yeah, it is huge, and most don't want to be honest. So we do what we can, and for those who are ready to be honest, you know, we make some pathways, we make some steps. Yeah.
And you know, to your amazing listeners, you know, this is not about, you know, white or black. This is about the fundamental right to live, a human right. So we're not pointing the fingers and saying, oh, your ancestors did this, you must feel guilty, because guilt is, you know, it serves no purpose. It's ever so self-indulgent. This is about us listening to and looking at how the world has played out, the haves and the have-nots, and how do we use, you know, privilege can be a bad thing, it can be a, I don't want to say it can be a good thing, but privilege has to be looked at in who holds power, who holds privilege, who has access to things, and how do we elevate others to make sure that they have the same access to good healthcare, to, you know, to education, to housing, those three fundamentals that allow us to survive and thrive.
Yeah.
When you don't have that, then, you know, you're not whole.
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, that's, it makes the most sense to me, but people like to decompartmentalize and don't look at the whole picture. And also there is a huge historical illiteracy across the board in Britain, with people not knowing our history, our collective history, our global history, because unless you have an appetite to find out for yourself, it's not taught.
Yeah. You've hit on a nail. So you asked me where I went to school. I went to school in Hertfordshire, and I can tell you everything about the Battle of Hastings. I can probably name Henry VIII's wives and maybe start talking about their children. But what I was not taught was about enslavement and slavery.
Yeah.
Unless it was through the lens of Christopher Columbus and what he may have discovered. So I got into trouble at school quite a bit because they saw me as disruptive.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'm not seeing myself in this Battle of Hastings.
Where was I?
We just arrived, or was we somewhere in the far out back and didn't contribute to anything?
Yeah.
So, you know, my mum took me to what was called Fanti School, so we can learn to speak our language. We got taught about our food. We got taught about Yawa Santawe and, you know, this prominent warrior African Ghanaian woman. And I was like, I'm not seeing that on our school, in our school books.
Mm.
So I made a concerted effort to go to the library, and, you know, I'd steal books on Marcus Garvey, and I say steal books. I have given all my library books back. but I would take them and I'd sit there and I'd read.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, where was this person?
Yeah.
You know, did you know Marcus Garvey had a boat, or a fleet of boats called the Black Starliners? That Black Starliners linked to Ghana. And although he was premature in his thoughts and his vision, he set up his own empire to challenge the whiteness and the supremacy of how they wanted to take over Africa.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, Black Starliner, the red, gold and green flag, the black star in the middle,
yeah,
that's the connection. And I guess, you know, if you're not taught that or you're not reading it, as you said, there is a sense of lost identity. So when they're telling us our black boys or our black girls or our children are unruly, or they are being expelled at the rate of knots, or they have, you know, they're unteachable. It's not. It's because you're not teaching them about their identity and where they're from. Yeah. And how they have contributed. So they feel a sense of loss in purpose, and they're not driven, they're not focused, they're not committed.
Yeah.
Because it's not connecting to their families and their families' families and so on.
And they're not taking into consideration the cumulative effects of receiving discrimination across society. Like, I'm not going to be inspired if I'm constantly receiving systemic abuse, including at school. It will go one way or the other. It will come out in like fawning or people pleasing, or the unruly behaviour, as I say in, you know, quoted air speeches. But it's, I remember my mum and dad, I don't remember how old I was, but I was very little, because the bookshelf, I remember looking up at the bookshelf. And so they used to buy these books, and they were mostly a collection of something, whether they were encyclopedias, but they were a collection, and every single edition had a different theme. And I remember pulling out these big giant books and just sitting for hours and reading in the conservatory. And that was where I saw visual representation of people like me. And that was where I started to understand a little bit more about my humanity, but it was in these snippets. It was never formal.
And isn't that so, it's so problematic, you know. You're just taking me to so many different places with this conversation, because I used to challenge my parents because we were Christian, went to church, you know, bows in the hair and everything. Why we had a picture of Jesus that was white and had blonde hair and blue eyes. Oh my gosh, I got into trouble. But I said, if he was from this part of the world, would his skin and hair not be different? But that is part of my parents having forced or imposed on them this colonial approach to even Christianity and what Jesus is supposed to, quote unquote, look like. But anyway, look.
I mean, you're there now. A thought's come to mind. But also, slavers used to conveniently. So slavers had one Bible, and enslaved people had another Bible, and they were often with lots of pages torn out to reinforce that actually enslaved people's role was to be in service. So there were so many contortions of what Christianity meant. And I understand why people who are black are Christian. I am also in conflict with it, but I also understand that it was individuals within that religion that contorted things. So it's very complex, and I don't even know why I've ended up going there today.
It's probably about telling a story, Nova. You know, when you have power and when you are able to write, you're able to tell the story, the narrative will be shaped for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what we do, whether it's UK Black Pride or Nova Reid and the work you do, we shape the narrative ourselves. We tell our stories. We talk about our lived experience. We make sure that society has woven into it who we are, because we have long been erased in so many different areas. So the power is in telling the story.
Yeah.
And I think if we look back to, you know, that historical context of whether it's religion, faith and belief, who was telling those stories?
Exactly.
Yeah. Who was infusing or providing us with information about what we should be or should not be following?
Exactly. and that shapes everything. So that's why it's so important that more stories are told from communities and people who look like us. So, I could talk to you all day.
I'm just like, you've got me thinking now. This is going to be a very thought-provoking day, and I'm going to say, Nova, we need to have this conversation again because I've got
so much to come back. I'm here for it. So whenever the time's right. Something that you touched upon at the beginning that I want to just bring up a bit is just holding what you hold. So all of the roles that you have that are hugely purpose-driven, ultimately around human rights, really, how do you navigate being, whether you intentionally choose to be or you just are because this is the purpose that you're serving right now, but a spokesperson, a figure for Black and queer liberation, how do you hold the expectations of being all things to all people?
I think I'll answer that slightly differently. I've now learnt that I do not want to be, and I cannot be, all things to all people.
Yeah.
What I can do is my very best. What I can do is make sure that whilst building movements, you're building with others. You know, one man, one woman, one person can't build a house alone.
Yeah.
It takes so many different people with different skills to make sure, you know, the ground is fertilized, the foundation is laid, the bricks go up, the plastering is done, the, you know, the electrics and the gas is all put in. And one person cannot do that alone. And you know, this is not to be big-headed, but the one thing I know about myself is I'm able to bring people along with me.
Yeah.
Making sure that I don't pull up the ladder behind me.
Yes.
I also recognise that I have reached a particular place that maybe some of my comrades, my counterparts, my siblings may not be there yet. So how do I look at where they're at and support them and bring them into the house, bring them into the home so they can also make it their home? And that's why UK Black Pride is a home. It's continually growing. It speaks so many different languages.
Yeah.
It has so many different ages. It has so many different shades of black and brown, you know, with our white allies who are there to understand that it centers who we are.
Yeah.
It has just a wealth of knowledge, skills, expertise. And that's the power of holding particular positions of influence, but making sure that others know that you're not just using them for what they've got, but you're bringing them in with you. And everything that we do should be by us and for us.
And you've just touched upon a really, really important nuance that bringing people in, not just for using them, because they're so, like, anti-blackness and racism is so rooted in extraction.
Yes.
And you're doing it. I think it's important for me to just pull that piece out and honour that, because it's the opposite of extraction. It's bringing people in so that they can, you know, share their talent or be of service or contribute in some way. There's a mutual exchange going on, not extraction.
Absolutely. I think most of us have felt that extraction or erasure or removal from something. So I think what I like to see with UK Black Pride is inserting, is bringing in, is us holding one another when we feel heavy. Many of us that are involved in the, you know, the back office or the back end of making UK Black Pride strong and stable and, you know, supportive to our communities, we've all gone through something that's made us say, you know what? We need to be in service of our community and communities. We need to find different ways to amplify our voices. We need to find different ways to be visible that also is safe. Because people talk about visibility, and being visible is not always safe.
It often isn't safe, sadly. In particularly in non-black spaces, it often isn't.
And like you, you know, Nova, I am in my day job in very white spaces, and sometimes I'm not sure if I'm seen. I'm seen because I stand out.
Yeah.
But I'm not seen and heard in different ways. So yes, I have a very loud voice, and not one that shouts, but one that is going to command your attention, you know, because I always say my ancestors guide me.
Yeah.
And they tell me exactly, this is the time for you to speak up. This is the time for you to hold back.
Yes.
Time for you to digest. This is the time for you to work collaboratively and work collectively with people. And this is also the time to hold yourself and hold yourself accountable, but being loving, compassionate and caring towards yourself.
Yeah.
And you can be towards others.
Yeah. And that's an important piece as well. Just a personal share. I find it relatively easy to be compassionate to people who cause harm to me and other people in our community. I find it less easy to be as compassionate to myself. So I think that's, that resonates in a different way. But there was something you said earlier about UK Black Pride being a space where you reimagine. So can you share a little bit more about what that looks like or can look like, or it has become? Because I know it will be evolving.
Yeah. Reimagining, you know, the power of the mind is, you know, amazing. So when you're thinking about how you want to change your house, you reimagine what that paint's colour would look like. You reimagine that new sofa and where you position it. And it would be the same for UK Black Pride. We keep on reimagining how many more of our trans siblings can we bring to the table so we're hearing their voices, so UK Black Pride gets better. How many more intersex people can tell us, you know, about their experience so we can make sure that intersectional lens and approach is taken towards our intersex communities.
Yeah.
We reimagine a world where we're not only having to talk about the hate and the pain and the suffering, but we are talking about Black queer joy.
Mm.
What is making you happy? What is making you feel loved? What is making you want to love?
Yes.
Reimagine a world where, you know, racism doesn't exist.
Mm.
And the moment we know that we have done our jobs and our lives are full of joy, that we're free from all forms of discrimination, that's when there may no longer be a need for UK Black Pride.
Yeah.
But that is utopia. That is in my ideal world. But if we continue to reimagine that and reimagine with many voices and many people, changes will happen. The ripple effects will become a tsunami that doesn't devastate communities but reaches out to so many people and changes their mind about how we've reimagined ourselves.
Yeah, that is beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And it's something that I don't know how many of us allow ourselves to do that, because we're so in, it's so easy to get sucked down, or it's not even sucked down, it's, you know, the trauma is present. Mm-hmm. And so this is not bypassing that. It's saying there is more to our humanity than how we are discriminated and how we are compounded, than and joy, being loved, loving one another, and
yeah. Yeah, and you know, I've worked on myself, so I don't want to ever come across like, oh, this is so easy, just reimagine and blah, blah, blah. I'm only at this stage because of the amount of time that I've needed to take to unlearn, to try to get angry and get angry without apology. And also where we've seen people that we've lost, where we've seen actual pain, where we no longer feel like today we're going to be resilient, you know. We don't get a chance to take off a day of being black.
Yeah.
We don't get a chance to take off a day for being a woman, for being LGBT plus person, for being differently abled or disabled. We don't get a chance to take that time out. And we also, especially as black people, don't get a chance to make mistakes.
Oh, yes.
So I've learned that I can make a mistake and not have to beat myself up about it.
Yeah.
Because we're not perfect.
Yeah. We're human.
Well, that's a beautiful way to segue us into my final question. And that is your theme for UK Black Pride this year is love and rage. So firstly, tell listeners when it is so they can get involved, but also tell me more about that theme.
So UK Black Pride this year, you know, we will be virtual because I can't take the decision to have 12,000 people in a park during, you know, what we've seen as this pandemic and how black and brown folks have been disproportionately impacted by COVID. But we will be taking place the 2nd to the 4th of July, a whole weekend of activity and performances and love and rage. I just love saying it. So when we thought about this theme, love and rage, we looked at our past themes, and last year was home. Because many of us were at home, some of us were in homes that didn't feel safe for us, some of us just absolutely loved being at home and centering ourselves because we'd never had the chance to also stand and be still.
Yeah.
This year, we have seen through the back end of last year the resurgence of Black Lives Matter. We have seen that there's still no justice for those who were impacted and affected by Grenfell, Windrush. We've seen such a vitriol towards our trans siblings, and we have still seen the amount of institutionalized, structured and systemic racism through a swell report that has come up about the race disparity. So there's rage there.
Oh, yeah.
We're angry. And rightfully so, and we're allowed to show rage and should be allowed to show rage. But at the same time, we love our community and we love our people. And when UK Black Pride comes together, it's filled with so much love. So how do we coexist in a space where we can feel rage, we can feel love, and we can combine the two, and we can sit in that?
Yeah.
And allow us to express ourselves in so many different ways. So you will hear from performers, from artists, from singers, from speakers, to our Desi room, our young room, our religion, faith and belief room.
Lovely.
All displaying and talking about the love they have and the rage they're allowed to express in different ways. And that is going to be so powerful from the 2nd to the 4th of July.
And that is perfect because to me, they're one in the same. They're at different ends of the spectrum. And the nuance for us is that, yeah, for so often we're not allowed to be angry. We have to swallow it, and giving people a vessel to express that alongside love and or not take anything away from love, I think is a beautiful pairing, and I can't wait to support and
I don't want this to end.
Can I ask you a question?
You may.
What is bringing you joy at the moment?
Nourishing conversations like this. I do half-day meditations on Saturday, and I try and do at least two per week, not half day, but be in community twice a week. Mm-hmm. I'm very silly, so I make sure that there is play in my life. I laugh every day. I have a husband who's equally gives me space for me to be me and silliness. Gospel music brings me a lot of grounding and joy. Mm. Being by the water. Mm. I have a cat who's hilarious. There are lots of different things, but I think just giving myself space to surrender to whatever it is that I'm experiencing is probably the most helpful for me. And I love a dance.
Oh, yes. Oh, you know, thank you for answering that. I also want your listeners to know what brings you joy.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that exact same question. But yeah, there's
other people, and it's also about what you're doing with this podcast to bring voices to the table. And that is empowering, that's inspiring, and it's liberating.
Thank you so much. It's, you know, it's tough sometimes, but I also feel very honoured and privileged to be serving in this way, in this moment, and who knows how long that will last for, but for now it's an honor, and there I couldn't do this work without joy. I couldn't do it, so it's present. Mm-hmm. Phil, thank you so much for joining me. I will let you go. Before I go, please let my listeners know where they can connect with you and some of the incredible work you're doing.
So you can find UK Black Pride, that's all one word, on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn and Facebook. You can also find myself on Twitter as MSLADYPHYLL, Miss Lady Phil. And I'm Lady Phil on Facebook and also Instagram. But also you can look at Kaleidoscope Trust, all one word, on all of the social media platforms. But do go to our website for UK Black Pride, because we have just launched a survey which is about looking at the needs of Black and POC LGBTQI people in the UK. And it's going to be the largest of its kind, which will allow us to set an action plan for how we support communities and where we've identified trends and where we need to think about our aspirations and what drives us.
So important. These experience matter. So if you are in those identities, then please do get involved. And if you're not, raise awareness and share. Phil, thank you so very much from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you. Much love to you.
Thank you so much.
Well, that was epic. Oh my goodness. I know I say this on most of my episodes, but I really hope this episode nourished you as much as it did me. And if it didn't, then for purely selfish reasons, I'm just going to enjoy that. It is a privilege and an honor to be in Phil's company. Please do follow her on social media and support the work that she is doing for all of us, for all of our humanity. If this episode resonates with you, you know what to do. Hop on over to your podcast host and leave us a review. They are much appreciated. And if any of the language that Phil and I have been using throughout this episode are new to you, like intersex or queer, then I would invite you to hop on over to Stonewall Charity. They have a really useful glossary for terms about different identities within the LGBTQ plus community. And I will also link those in the show notes for you. As ever, thank you for joining us, and I will see you next time.